105 Drive with Julian Clover.
This is Cambridge 105.
The Gadget Guide.
And on a Friday afternoon, drifting very much into Friday evening, it's the Gadget Guide with Rob and Lawrence, and also a guest to introduce as well.
Yes. Evening, Julian.
Hello. Good evening. Welcome along to Gadget Guide number 99, just one off of the century. We'll have to have a celebration in a couple of weeks' time, and there'll be plenty of stuff to celebrate.
And cake, hopefully, too.
Oh, okay. So that's an order.
Yeah, please.
Okay, fine. We'll sort that out. Maybe we'll have to have some gadget-themed cake. I'm sure we can sort something. Anyway, we will be talking in a few minutes' time to William Tunstall-Peddo, who is the creator, British entrepreneur, and the creator of some of the deep artificial intelligence technology behind the Amazon Alexa. You might have heard that a few minutes ago, telling us what the weather was in Cambridge this evening. But William will be joining us, talking all things artificial intelligence and digital assistance. First of all, as usual, though, a roundup of this week's technology news. The GoPro, their new drone, the GoPro Karma, they've only just launched it, but they're already recalling it.
Yep, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and unfortunately, it looks like they've got a battery problem. Fortunately, though, it's not blowing up batteries.
Not doing the same as the Galaxy Note 7s.
No, this is sudden loss of power. Which is, I suppose, not ideal if your drone is a couple hundred feet in the sky.
No, it literally is. It falls out of the sky, isn't it?
So they are doing a recall, and they say that they will be sorting out all of those and replacing the faulty units.
Now, I have to say, they have done this, they've handled this very, very well. They've just said to everyone who's gone and got one, just bring it back, send it back, we'll give you your money back. There's no messing around with store credit, no just doing an exchange. It is bring it back. We will give you a full refund of that, plus any accessories that you may have bought with it as well. Yep. So they obviously want to get them out of the, well, get them out of the sky before they do come to any harm or cause anyone else to come to any harm.
So 2,500 units, all recalled.
No doubt they will be back on it. It's a bit of a shame because GoPro have been such a pioneering company, really, in the action cams originally, almost the generic term for a sort of miniature outdoor camera. And they've been struggling. This was in a sense their hope. This was what was going to save them as a company. Mm. So it's a great shame to see them have problems with it.
But I think they're dealing with it the right way.
They certainly are. I'm sure they'll get that sorted in no time.
So yeah, if you were trying to buy one for Christmas, it might be unavailable at the moment, but it's due back soon, they say.
Very good. Google are having a play around with some new technology. Of course, no strangers to virtual reality, and they had the Google Cardboard a while back.
So this is their new product, which is sort of one up from the Cardboard. This is the Google Daydream.
Okay.
And this is a unit to put your phone into, to turn it into VR, like the Cardboard did. Slightly more expensive. The Cardboard was free to about £5 if you paid for it.
On account of it being Cardboard.
Whereas the Daydream is about £69, and works with quite a growing number of smartphones. Obviously, Google's own Pixel, new XL range of phones, and it's quite a different design to Samsung's Galaxy VR, Gear VR, in that they've sort of given it a material type finish, so it looks softer.
Okay.
Apparently not particularly comfortable, though, according to reviewers.
And is definitely going, in a sense, at the budget end of the market. If you compare this to something like the HTC Vive, that's coming in at maybe £700,
£750. This is to slip your phone into,
like
the Gear VR, and unlike all the other ones which require a computer or high-end devices to make them work.
Now, the flip side, of course, is that because, yes, you don't have the high-end graphics that you do with the Vive and the Oculus Rifts and the like, what it does give you, because your phone's in it, you don't have any cables attached.
Yes, although the Gear VR, the Samsung product, has a USB input for you to actually feed power into your phone, because the phone will run out of juice fairly quickly.
That's true. Although I guess you could solve that with one of those USB battery packs stuffed in your back pocket or something.
Still got to get power to it somehow.
Tangled
anyway,
up.
The problem is they do get hot, although apparently this one doesn't fog up like the Samsung does. So it's got its advantages, it's got its drawbacks. The advantage is it's a cheap way to try out VR.
Okay. A couple of data privacy stories now. WhatsApp, we talked about this a little while ago, of course acquired by Facebook not too long back, and a bit of an investigation's been going on, because Facebook, having acquired WhatsApp itself, links instant messaging to your mobile phone number.
And generally your contact address book in your phone.
Exactly. Now owned by Facebook, Facebook were trying to take advantage of that, in effect, to bring all of that information that it had in line with your Facebook profile. Yep. Maybe a lot of people not comfortable with that because, you know, they trusted it to one company. Now it's being merged in with a load of other information. They've had to backtrack on that.
Yeah, so we told you how to opt out of the Facebook sharing with WhatsApp. There was an option which was only available for a short period of time and was not easy to find. So a few people went and spoke to the Information Commissioner's office in the UK. And the Information Commissioner ruled Facebook are not allowed to do this.
Okay.
So basically they've had to stop sharing data between WhatsApp and Facebook in the UK.
Interesting. Going around, I guess, taking it around the other way, Admiral, the insurance company, have been banned by Facebook. So on the one hand, Facebook's been told off. On the other hand, it's doing the same to someone else. Admiral were trying to use your Facebook profile data to influence your insurance quote.
Yep.
And they've been told not to do that as well.
Yep. They were going to scrape people's Facebook profiles and work out whether you were high risk or not and, adjust premiums appropriately and also potentially allow you to self-incriminate.
Yeah, so yeah. You always get the situation where people take a photo of themselves exceeding the speed limit, post it to Facebook, and get a little bit surprised when the police come knocking.
Yes, Facebook on both sides of the fence. One defending our privacy and one having to get told not to go snooping.
There we go. Well, we'll be back in a couple of minutes' time. We'll be talking to William about all things Amazon, Alexa, and other digital assistant technology.
Did you see the story about Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook saying that Facebook wasn't responsible for the election of Donald Trump? Apparently some...
yes.
False news stories which Facebook had allowed to continue.
It's an interesting...
Which I presume is separate from the spoof news stories.
Yes, it's an interesting one because, of course, they, particularly with their top-rated news feeds, they do a lot of algorithmic selection of what news stories they think you're going to be interested in. It does tend to cause a little bit of a filter bubble. Hello and welcome back to Gadget Guide number 99. And we're talking all things digital assistants. I'm not sure I can quite should say the name of it, but we do have a special guest here. William, thank you very much for joining us here this evening.
My pleasure.
You're the, just to give some of your background, you're the founder originally of Eevee.
That's right. Originally called True Knowledge. So
okay.
It changed its name to Eevee just a few months before Amazon acquired us. So.
Okay, and what did the company develop?
So it developed technology for understanding natural language, understanding English, and automatically answering questions. So sort of very deep technology to basically understand, to make computers understand you and respond. So
and this is, I guess there's two halves to that problem. There is the taking our speech.
Yep.
And turning that into text, and then there's taking text in English prose and turning that into intent, I guess is
that's right. Yeah, absolutely. And then there's also, you know, in for question answering, there's also a lot of complexity in terms of answering that as well. So sometimes you have to reason with knowledge to produce an answer. So there's deep technology there as well, and at the other end there's technology to turn the output back into speech again. So there's lots of very deep technologies that have to be stacked on top of each other to create that experience that we're seeing now.
And presumably that part of this is resolving, you know, ambiguities of you know, not only sort of what the same words might mean in different contexts, but, you know, what's a sensible answer to give. And, you know, you can measure speed, I think the classic one is sort of milli furlongs per megalight year or something like that, which
yep.
which is a perfectly valid thing to do, but makes yep. absolutely no sense to anyone.
But if you want to show off and have your computer respond in those kind of units, that's great. It comes completely naturally to people to sort of say things different ways and rephrase things. And we've seen questions, for example, that can be phrased in literally millions of different ways. And a computer has to effortlessly understand all those different ways of asking the same question and know that it means the same. You know, the brain does it completely naturally, but make a computer do it is really, really hard.
And how do you make a computer do it? Do you try and, in effect, mimic a human brain, or do you take a different approach?
Well, both, actually, both is the answer. So a lot of modern artificial intelligence is based on this technique called neural networks, which are inspired by the way the brain works. It's a sort of learning machine that's inspired by the neurons in the brain. But there's also classic artificial intelligence techniques that recognize patterns in other ways and other algorithms for doing it. So it's a really big subject which we could happily spend a week discussing if you wanted to. But the answer is both.
So in terms, you say artificial intelligence, and I guess when most people hear that, they might sort of think Johnny Five, and not the one that's on the urban baseline, but the one from the film. And I guess to bring it more up to date, you know, to some of the kind of film-based artificial intelligence characters.
So humans may be running on Channel 4 now on a Sunday
yes.
night once more.
But you sort of think of that as effectively a complete human mimicking robot. And we're not there yet, are we? But artificial intelligence is very much real and very much here today.
Absolutely. So the term broadly means things that computers find difficult, that people think requires intelligence to do. But there's also a concept of general artificial intelligence, which is more ill-defined, which isn't here yet, which is where we have a machine that is entirely better than a brain, so it can do everything that a person can, but better. And you see that in sci-fi, but that isn't here yet. But you know, there's products like Amazon Echo and the A word, Alexa, which we're not going to say because she might wake up, are steps on the way there. It creates a human-like experience. People relate to the A word in a way that's very human.
So let's take this now into the physical form, and we do have a little black cylinder on the table in front of us. Lawrence, you've brought this in from home. Go on, show it.
So this is my Alexa Echo, and she's now listening, and we can say things like, "What's the weather tonight?"
Right now in Cambridge, it's 7 degrees with clear skies. Tonight's forecast has rainy weather with a low of 5 degrees.
And we can say things like, "Alexa, what's the traffic like on the A14?
The fastest route takes about 29 minutes via A14 and A11.
I'm not sure where it thinks I was going to.
she doesn't. What she's giving you, I think, is your pre-configured route home, home.
Right.
I don't think she can answer Pacific roads yet. But
okay.
that's something
that might be coming. Yeah.
That might
okay.
be something that she might be able to do in the future. Who knows?
The one I like is if you ask her a distance. If you ask her, for example, how far it is to London, and you get the precise answer. But so it's how she answers it precisely. I don't even want to have a go at that, Lawrence.
We can do. How far is it to London?
Your current location is 51.1 miles, 82.2 kilometres, from London, as the crow flies.
Or as the Amazon drone flies, presumably, as well.
Hopefully not a GoPro one that's going to fall out of the sky somewhere over St Albans.
So it can answer questions. What is quite clever is the fact that a lot of it works out context. So if we ask it things that are relevant to our location, like what's the weather like, it's already worked out that we're in Cambridge and that's where we want to know about the weather, but we can ask it more specific things like what's the weather like in another city, and it'll get that sort of thing right.
That's right.
I know it's getting better at some things, and there's people always posting stuff on the internet about things it gets wrong. What is it getting wrong badly most of the time these days still?
Well, that's one of those ever-moving questions. And, you know, if we're aware that something's wrong and it's a big problem, we're going to be fixing it at a high priority. So it's a constantly moving target.
Well, apparently the favourite one at the moment is it doesn't understand when you ask it to play the national anthem. It plays Radiohead's The National Anthem.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I have an issue. There's a radio station, I'm not listening to Cambridge 105, called The River, and it's a US station. And, of course, if you ask it to play The River, then it instantly comes up with Bruce Springsteen. then the problem is calling it by its call sign. And it's clearly the way I enunciate the letter V, because when I say play WXRV, it will come up with WXRY, WXR this, and it's just I'm just trying to work out a form of words which will give it that particular request.
Now, William, I notice you've as we've been sitting
making
here
notes.
made a note of play the national anthem. But yeah, this is, as you say, it's very much an ongoing bit of development, and you're presumably involved in that as Evie Nelpot of Amazon?
Well, actually, no. I actually left a few months ago. So
right.
So it's force of habit.
But the company is.
The company is absolutely. Yes. So the business I founded is now a subsidiary of Amazon, and it's now Amazon in Cambridge. So mm-hmm. everybody that works for Amazon in Cambridge works for the business I founded. Although it's well and truly part of Amazon, and it's run just like everybody else that works for Amazon. So the Evie team, is a team in that development centre, and there's other teams as well. So the Primeair drone team is also in that building. It's been a super, super exciting journey.
What's Cambridge like as a place to develop this sort of technology? And obviously there's the computer laboratory out at West Cambridge. Does a lot of this tech come out from academic research? Or?
Some of it does. So Cambridge is a fantastic place to found a tech company, from a global scale. I used to jokingly refer to Cambridge, semi-jokingly refer to Cambridge as the second best place in the second best country, and that sounds like a joke. But,
as long as it's not Oxford.
Based on this week, has that changed slightly in ranking?
obviously the US, for a lot of technology businesses, the US is better, and Silicon Valley, of course, is ground zero. And London, Cambridge, they compete. London's got a lot more people, which is an advantage. But Cambridge is a fantastic place. It's got the university. It's got a lot of very, very relevant businesses, a lot of talent. It's got an entrepreneurial culture.
So you look at all the stuff that's been invented here besides Evie and Alexa.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Bluetooth.
Yep.
Lots of things.
Where do you say we've got the
dot.
Echo Dot?
Yep.
Being careful of my choice of words here. Just waiting for the blue ring to light up.
I think we should make it free to be able to say the Alexa word, and then if she answers, then that just makes it more fun.
So we've got Alexa sitting here, and actually she's being very good at realising that I'm talking about her rather than to her.
Yeah. So strictly Alexa is the personality in the cloud, and the Amazon Dot or the Amazon Echo is the actual device
product
that we're talking about. But everybody everybody personifies her. So you think of her as the product or her as the main thing we're talking to.
Now Google have just announced in the last couple of days Google Home, which they're going to be shipping, which is going to be effectively their equivalent type of thing, where you'll have a widget in your house, and you'll have to say, "Okay, Google," which just doesn't have the same personality.
No, I agree. I think Google's missing a trick there.
Yeah.
I think the personification, the sort of the social interaction, is actually one of the.
Everyone got used to talking to Siri.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And no one really got used to saying "Okay, Google" to the Android devices.
Yep.
It just doesn't have the same.
It just feels completely talking to a multinational feels completely wrong to me.
What's the choice of the voice important? Is there a real person who sounds like that somewhere, or has she been created as well?
Yes, I probably shouldn't say too much about this because it's trade secrets. But yeah, there's voice talent behind the voice.
And if one buys one in the United States,
it's got a different voice.
It's a different voice.
Yeah.
So and is it important that, if you like, the style of the voice, in the same way that a call centre would like to use certain parts of Scotland because it sounds nicer?
So this is like hugely strategic for Amazon and all these businesses. So a lot of effort was spent finding exactly the right.
And presumably this goes not only to making people enjoy using it, but feel comfortable. And I remember when Google launched their self-driving cars, they went to a lot of effort to make them look smiley and friendly, and okay, they look like a little bit like toys, but that was deliberate. And I guess the same is true for the Echo. If you've got something sitting in your house listening, people need to feel comfortable with it.
Yes. Amazon is a fantastic business, and it's very, very, very focused on what's good for customers. So obviously everything about it is designed to be friendly and attractive. So
it launched in the US way before it launched in the UK. So I guess a lot of the work was making it British.
But a lot of the work for the US version took place right here in Cambridge. Some of the capabilities were already there.
And you had to teach it to be American, and spell wrong and so on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We had to teach it to spell wrong and do all sorts of things wrong.
Did you have to delete some humour, like Fawlty Towers and Blackadder?
There was definitely some of that. The jokes are different. The US and the UK jokes are different. And there's various other things.
How many jokes are there?
Lots.
Or is it growing all the time?
It's growing and changing all the time, yes, right. Absolutely. So it's one of the great things about it is that, you know, every time, you know, as I say, I wrote down the thing you said wrong and you know, when I was working for the company, we would fix it as soon as somebody blogged. It's
apparently in the US it will play the Star Spangled Banner.
Will it?
Yeah,
okay.
Apparently.
I did not know that one. I'm sure somebody is rushing to fix this.
Yeah, there'll be someone punching away at the code.
So where do you think this is going to be? Let's fast forward 2 years maybe, because that's a lifetime in technology. Where are we going to be at that point, and what are our homes going to look like with Alexa or whatever her successor is, her daughter,
well,
I guess?
Things are improving all the time. So you'll have a better experience, it'll be wrong less often, it'll be able to do more. That's the sort of 2 year time frame. I mean, long term, I think we'll be talking to everything. A voice will be absolutely everywhere. You'll be surprised when you speak to a bit of technology and it doesn't respond.
Right.
So you get into a lift.
I mean, the one thing we haven't mentioned is the fact that it can interact with Internet of Things and smart devices in your house. I mean, I'll walk into my house now and I'll say, Alexa, lounge on. It's now going to think that it should try that.
So somewhere in the north of Cambridge, there's going to be a Christmas tree illuminated.
I strategically...
It sounds like you're asking about Maria Sharapova, the tennis player.
No. I took the strategic move of turning the lights off manually so that it couldn't turn them on.
Right.
But yes, things like, you know, turn on the lights, turn up the heat.
Again, your central heating is now okay for me.
Yeah. That's right. So home control. So as I say, it'll be able to do more, understand more, answer more. There'll be less glitch, you know, less having to repeat yourself.
Less glitches than Maria Sharapova.
Constantly repeating. Exactly. Less bizarre responses like that. But, you know, what we have now is something that's fundamentally useful and is right most of the time.
Yeah.
In 2 years' time, it'll be more polished, bigger, doing a lot more. In 10 years' time, it'll be omnipresent. I think you'll be talking to your car. You'll be talking as you go around, go into buildings, into your office. You'll be controlling an awful lot of things with voice. You'll be doing very complicated, much more complicated queries.
Very good, William. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
And go and find out what your house has been doing in the meantime.
What has Alexa done to my house?
I think we need to ask Alexa one more question. Alexa, who is Neil Whiteside?
No. I think she stopped listening to us.
Disappointing.
Oh, that sounds about right. After six, Siri beatbox.
Here's one I've been practicing: boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots. I could do this all day. Cats and boots and cats and boots and cats and boots and cats.
That's coming up after six. Looking forward to the weekend warm up now, are you? Technology's a wonderful thing.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, my giddy aunt. Right, coming up to 6 o'clock, and we'll have a quick look at the travel. Has been quite busy out there this afternoon. And the A14 eastbound is partially blocked. Long delays due to an accident at Junction 28, Buckingway Road, which is Boxworth, with congestion back to Junction 23 at Spittles Interchange in Huntingdon. It's affecting traffic from Huntingdon towards Cambridge and queues of several miles on the approach. So it looks like you've got a whole hour of Neil Whiteside to listen to whilst you get into Cambridge. A14 at Girton going westbound, partially blocked there. Long delays due to an accident between Junction 31, which is Girton, and Junction 30, the Oakington Road. Congestion on the A14 back to Junction 33. The A10 Milton, that accident around half a mile after the end of the M11. St Neots, the A428, both directions partially blocked and long delays. We've got a collapsed drain and emergency repairs between the B1428 Cambridge Road at St Neots and Abbotsley Road at Croxton. Congestion back to the E1 at Eaton Socon. Have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday at 4.